Our next case is number 06-3745, Bodana Romanets against the Attorney General. Mr. Croteau.
May it please the Court, Guy Croteau on behalf of the petitioner, Bodana Romanets. Your Honors, this is an immigration case involving an alleged false claim to citizenship. We have a Ukrainian citizen who came to the United States seeking asylum. She did not speak English or Spanish. She spoke only Ukrainian, Russian, a little bit of German. She entered the United States through Mexico. She got into a line of people going to the United States. At the border, when she came to the border inspector, she handed him her Ukrainian passport. She was referred to an INS officer that spoke Ukrainian, and she immediately said she wanted to apply for asylum. A credible fear interview was had. A credible fear was determined that she did have a credible fear of returning, and she was referred to the immigration court for processing on her asylum application. She was in detention for approximately a month. She did contact a distant relative of her mother's in Chicago, who spoke Polish and English, but no Russian nor Ukrainian. He had hired an attorney and paid her bond. There was three hearings. There was the first three court hearings. There were no interpreters, no Russian or Ukrainian interpreters at all. The BIA mentions that there was Russian interpreters at the first two hearings. There was not. The distant relative spoke Polish. At the San Diego hearing, the Ms. Romanets met her distant relative and an attorney in the hallway. The explanation by her Polish relative, Polish and Russian are a little bit similar, so she gleaned that the case was being transferred to Chicago, and that is all she understood about what was going on. She had no knowledge of any concession of charges, admissions of fact, or anything else. It wasn't until she changed attorneys before the fourth hearing because of the language problem. It wasn't until the fourth hearing that was the first time that an interpreter was present. It was the first time that she could understand what was going on, and it was the first time she heard anything about falsely claiming U.S. citizenship. The Department of Homeland Security attorney raised the issue in cross-examination, and she denied it. The next time she heard the allegation that she had falsely claimed U.S. citizenship was in the reopened case after she had won the diversity lottery. She again denied it. At that time, she withdrew her any prior concessions made without her consent or knowledge. She filed written pleadings specifically denying that charge. She conceded that she did not come into the United States with valid entry documents and was removable on that basis, but she did not claim false citizenship. And the judge refused to accept it on the basis that, despite the clear evidence, affidavits from the Polish relative's wife, the Polish relative died in the meantime. We have an affidavit from his wife indicating that he did not speak Ukrainian, he did not speak Russian, he only spoke Polish and English. The judge held that she had misrepresented herself to be a U.S. citizen on the basis of the attorney in San Diego's concession that she had done so. It's our position that Ms. Romanets never violated Section Immigration and Nationality Act, Section 212A6C2.
Didn't several of her attorneys concede this?
No, just the first one, Your Honor. And in fact, it was never throughout the transcripts. The first time you will see anything regarding false claim of citizenship is in the fourth hearing when the DHS attorney is asking her about it. That's the first time that it comes up. The prior attorneys were prosecuting the asylum claim. The issue of the false, and even at the first hearing in San Diego, the judge did not say what the charges were. She didn't say them out loud. The attorney in San Diego just merely said that he would concede the allegations and or admit the allegations and concede the charge. Never, even if she could understand English, it was never brought to her attention at any point in time until the fourth hearing when the Department of Homeland Security attorney asked her about falsely claiming citizenship at the border, and she flatly denied it. It's our position that she could not have done so. You can't claim
well,
a citizen.
Well, she apparently denied it throughout, but her correct. Attorneys did not. That's what I find rather perplexing about this case.
I agree. The attorney in San Diego, we don't believe, first off, he never interviewed her. He never spoke to her about her case. He never got any facts from her. He never found out what was going on at the border. He indicated to the court that the distant relative could translate. The distant relative could not translate. He just admitted the allegations and conceded the charges and let it go with that. He did not investigate the case at all. He did not talk to the client. He did not interview her. He did not ask her any questions. It's our position that she cannot misrepresent a fact without knowingly attempting to deceive something. I mean, the provision itself, again, we believe that she did not violate, in any event, Immigration and Nationality Act Section 212A6CI because, first off, an alien who falsely represents them for the purpose of, for any purpose or benefit under the immigration laws. She couldn't have been asking for a benefit under the immigration laws when she's asking for asylum. A U.S. citizen doesn't need asylum. She also handed him the passport, so they knew exactly who she was, and she was claiming to be a Ukrainian citizen, and they knew that right from the start. She did not misrepresent herself to be a U.S. citizen, and if by default, because she got into the line for U.S. citizens, she couldn't read the English or Spanish signs, and the people in front of her were
but
saying...
At what point were these facts put into the record?
In the fourth hearing, the DHS attorney, that's the first time that the question of falsely claiming citizenship came up. That's the first time at her merits hearing, and she denied it. It was not mentioned by any of the prior, by the judge in any of the prior hearings. In fact, in one hearing, Judge Vinegar simply refers to conceding that she did not enter with valid travel documents, which was true, and we admit that. But nowhere until the DHS attorney asked her on cross-examination in the fourth hearing.
What kind of documents didn't she have?
She didn't have a visa. She didn't have a border crossing card. She didn't have any sort of entry permit. I mean, she came and she was asking for asylum. She wanted an application for asylum. So she did not have, she had valid travel documents. Her passport was valid. It was in her name, all the correct information. But she did not have a visa to enter the United States. She didn't have a border crossing card. Those are the documents that she did not have. And we admit that. And that was the other basis. That was the second charge. And that is conceded. We agree with that. But she never claimed to be a U.S. citizen. Never. The notion
you're well into your rebuttal time.
I will preserve the rest of my time. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Pluto. We'll hear now from Ms. Mai.
May it please the Court, my name is Antje Mai for the United States Attorney General. Petitioner's claims fail for three reasons. First, her challenges to the board's denial of her application for adjustment of status is rendered moot by the expiration of her diversity visa. Second, she has waived any challenge to the finding of her inadmissibility. And third, even assuming that the court exercises jurisdiction in this matter, there are two things. One, she hasn't shown any abuse of discretion in the denial of her request to withdraw the concession of inadmissibility. And second, she has not shown any error in the board's denial of her application for adjustment of status based on her inadmissibility. As far as the mootness issue, petitioner's diversity visa expired on September 30th, 2005. That means that she had no visa immediately available, and she also could not establish her admissibility in that she was inadmissible for two grounds which she could not establish a waiver for. According to this court's decision in Qureshi, then dismissal is appropriate for mootness if the court cannot grant any effectual relief, and that's the case here. As far as her waiver, the government's brief addresses this claim further, but I would like to underscore that petitioner had at least 7 different opportunities to raise the arguments she now raises after 4 years when she had conceded the issue of inadmissibility. And she didn't do so either at any of her hearings initially. There were 4 hearings, and she did not also do so at the hearing on October 16, 2003, when there was a Russian interpreter and the immigration judge did address the grounds of inadmissibility charged against her. And then after that, when she was aware of the waiver...
She claimed she understood Russian, and there was a Russian interpreter.
Yes, Your Honor. And at that time, even though she was fully cognizant of it, the charges against her, she did not challenge that on appeal to the board. And then when she filed her motion to reconsider, she again did not raise any issue as far as her inadmissibility. It wasn't until 4 years later, after the immigration judge during the reopened proceedings pointed out, well, there's a problem here. You cannot establish admissibility. And at that point, she sought to withdraw her inadmissibility concession. So the question really isn't so much whether or not the burden of proof was satisfied for establishing her inadmissibility. It's whether or not the board abused its discretion in denying her request to withdraw the concession. And this court's law under Salimi clearly provides that the concessions of her attorneys, and there were 3 different attorneys that had conceded or otherwise did not contest the prior concession, and that those...
There was one attorney that made this concession, is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor, at the original hearing in September of 2001. And then the subsequent 2 attorneys did not contest any of the allegations or the concessions. And at that point, then, because of those concessions, then she is bound by them, as the court has determined in Salimi. So here, she hasn't shown anything other than the concessions were actually made for her benefit to transfer the case to Chicago from San Diego. And so, as this court has determined, then when there's a tactical decision involved,
where in the record will we find that tactical decision?
Your Honor, if Your Honor would look to the record at pages... ...337 to 38 and 341 to 42 and 540, it reflects that there was a change of venue and that the request for the change of venue was granted because there was a voluntary waiver of the official translation and the concession of admissibility. In fact, if the court looks at the record at pages 539 to 540, it states that the Department of Homeland Security did not oppose the request to change venue, quote, given that petitioner has admitted to the charges in the notice to appear and conceded removability, end quote. As a result, the record clearly establishes that it was appropriate for the board to determine that the petitioner was not eligible for adjustment of status because she had been determined to be inadmissible based on those concessions of counsel. Unless the court has any other questions, the government would then request that the court deny the petition for review based on those 3 grounds.
Thank you, Ms. Meyer. How much time does counsel have? Thank you.
Your Honor, this is not moot. There is a permanent bar if, in fact, she is found inadmissible under the 212A-C-6 thing. There's a permanent bar for her ever in the future requesting any benefit. She has a present interest in being able to apply for benefits. She will not be able to do that if this finding stands. She did not waive it at the 4th hearing. She did contest during the 4th hearing when there was that Russian interpreter.
Understand Russian, and a Russian interpreter was adequate for the circumstances.
That's correct, and that was the 4th hearing when the DHS attorney asked her about falsely claiming citizenship at the border. That was the first time that it had been said, and that was the first time an interpreter was there. That was the first time it was raised. As far as it being a tactical decision, she didn't know anything about it, and it didn't make a difference to her whether her asylum claim was held in San Diego or in Chicago. That didn't make any difference to her one way or the other. Falsely claiming citizenship is punishable criminally with deportation and creates the permanent bar. It doesn't make any sense. It can't be a reasonable tactical decision to set up your client to be criminally prosecuted, deported, and forever barred from any immigration law and from any immigration benefit. That wasn't. It might have been tactical on the attorney's part, but it served her no purpose whatsoever. She received no benefit from it. She could have done. I'm sorry, my time is up. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Mr. Krutow. Indeed, our thanks to both counsel in the case, and the case will be taken under advisement.